Cold mornings, frosty windows. Yep, it's that time of year. So treat yourself and start your day with a cup of fresh roasted Sterling Roastery coffee, sourced from around the world and roasted multiple times a week for unbeatable freshness. It's the kind of warm-up every sports fan deserves this holiday season. And right now, you can win one of three $50 Sterling gift cards, perfect for gifting or building your own winning lineup of Java in the morning. Enter today at sportshistorynetwork.com/giveaways so you can wake up, warm up, and Sterling up this holiday season. Again, that's sportshistorynetwork.com/giveaways.
125 defining moments, one legendary league. This is Darren Hayes of the Pigskin Dispatch podcast, and a great book is out right now, NFL Moments, 125 Icons and Stories That Define the NFL. It's a definitive visual history of the National Football League, packed with iconic images and untold stories behind the game's biggest plays and its greatest players. From the early legends like Red Grange to today's stars like Patrick Mahomes, this book is a touchdown for fans who crave more than just stories. So give your football bookshelf a Hall of Fame upgrade or snag a holiday gift for that NFL history buff on your shopping list. Pick up NFL Moments, available now at your favorite bookseller. I hope you're hungry for some great football information because we are joining Timothy T. Brown for one of his famous factoid feasts. Tim's up in just a moment to tell us all about this great football history.
This is the Pigskin Daily History Dispatch, a podcast that covers the anniversaries of American football events throughout history. Your host, Darren Hayes, is podcasting from America's North Shore to bring you the memories of the gridiron one day at a time.
Hello, my football friends. This is Darren Hayes of PigskinDispatch.com. Welcome once again to the Pigpen, your portal to positive football history. And welcome to another Tuesday where we get to go back in time, the time machine of Tim Brown and his football archaeology tidbits. Tim, welcome back to the Pigpen.
Hey, Darren. Looking forward to chatting. And like I always say, there's nothing like hanging with my boy, Darren.
I don't think you ever say that, Tim.
I say it all the time.
Yeah, I'm sure.
Ask my wife.
Yeah, it's really getting deep in here. I got to get the boots on here in the pig pen. But we have one of my favorite segments of yours. You have your factoid feasts, and the one we're going to talk about tonight is your 15th rendition. You're far beyond that now. You've got them coming out quite often now. Not quite often, but they come out periodically, let's say.
Yeah.
And these are little rapid-fire tidbits that are the tidbits of tidbits, I guess you could say. And
yes,
you put multiples together and really a lot of fun. So what do you have in store for us tonight?
Yeah, so this one, I've kind of started trying to find, like, themes to the factoid feast. And so this one is, like, kind of really old days of, you know, like maybe pre-1910. So the first one concerns a guy named Bemis Pierce. And, you know, he was a stud. You know, he played for Carlisle. And so, you know, he played in the old days of Carlisle, like, you know, before the century turned. And so it kind of focuses on a game that occurred in 1896. Carlisle played Wisconsin at the Chicago Coliseum. And, you know, if you're not familiar with the Coliseum, and there's really no reason why you should be, but the Coliseum was an indoor venue. And so this is one of the early games it's an early game under artificial lights. It's an early game indoors. And, you know, they played a couple of different games there, you know, different teams did. But in any event, in 1896, Wisconsin had a kicker punter named Pat O'Day. He's an Australian guy, so they called him the Kangaroo Kicker. And he was an absolute stud. He had a 110-yard punt and made a 60-yard field goal from against the sideline, because, you know, no hash marks back then. I said 60-yard punt, 60-yard kick, field goal from along a sideline. So that, I mean, pretty impressive guy. But, and that the day that they played Carlisle, he had a 50, 45, 50, and 75-yard punts that day. So, I mean, hard to beat a, you know, kicking punting performance like O'Day that day. And yet, Bemis Pierce had bested O'Day in terms of the hang time that he accomplished that day, because, you know, he's playing in an indoor stadium. And at one point in the game, Pierce punts the ball. It heads up, sailing up into the air, and it gets stuck in the rafters of the stadium, you know, of the stadium. And, you know, so literally some fan crawled out on the beams and everything to knock the ball back down onto the field, because they only had one ball. You know, they had one game ball, and they were going to have to use that thing no matter what happened to it. And so anyways, I just think that's kind of an amusing thing. And but Bemis Pierce ends up, he was the, so he had, you know, probably the longest hang time of the year, one would think, for 1896. He ends up playing pro football with the Homestead team in, you know, the, I guess, Philadelphia area, right? It was Homestead?
No, Homestead down by Pittsburgh.
Okay, Pittsburgh. Yeah, same difference, Pennsylvania. Yeah.
And just a few hundred miles apart.
Yeah, so. Yeah, whatever. But, you know, he ended up coaching at a couple of places. And as far as I know, he's the only guy who played at all the big three Indian schools. He coached at Sherman out in California. He coached at Haskell in Kansas, and he coached at Carlisle in Pennsylvania. And in 1906, he was the coach when that's the first year of the forward pass. And so he was the coach who had his eligible receivers paint their helmets red or white to distinguish them from ineligible receivers. So he's the guy who first had football helmets painted a color other than tan or black, you know, or, you know, whatever football helmets naturally turned out.
So step aside, Gerkey. We got somebody before.
Yeah, yeah. Oh, yeah. No, for sure.
Yeah.
So, you know, that's kind of a good one. And then the next part of the tidbit was Benny Owen.
Well,
oh, sorry.
But before you go ahead, because there's some more on Bemis Pierce, because I believe, well, I know Bemis Pierce was a part of the 1902 World Series of Football. He was part of that Syracuse team. I think him and his brother were on that. Okay. And the 1903 World Series of Football, Patty O'Day was supposed to enter into it, and he backed out his team. He was some dental school in the Midwest. They backed out at the last minute, and the Orange, New Jersey got in, was one of the four teams for that second World Series of Football. So both those guys were involved in those World Series of Footballs at Madison Square Garden.
Yeah, and those were very famous among the early pro football, you know, folks. Mm-hmm. O'Day was, I had an interesting conversation recently with an American guy who's living in Australia, who's in a lot of Australian football things. And so we had a whole conversation about Pat O'Day, and he's got a research to him, and he was saying that O'Day must have run into, I forget what it was, gambling problems or something like that. But like, he disappeared for like 30 years. And like, Wisconsin had no idea what happened to the guy. And then he suddenly reappears in like 1932, shows up at Camp Randall, Hello. So anyways.
Okay. I'm sorry. You're going to start on your next, next segment.
Yeah. So Benny Owen, I mean, he's one of those guys that, you know of Benny Owen because Owen Field at Oklahoma is named after him. And so, but, you know, he's one of those guys that you don't really, you know, you've heard Owen Field a million times, but you have no idea who the guy is. And he's a really interesting fellow. So he was, he played at Kansas And his senior year, he plays under this guy named Fielding Yost. And he was one of the first guys. He's actually, other than a guy that played at Chicago under Stagg, he's the second earliest guy I know of who threw an overhand spiral pass in a game. Now, he threw it as a lateral, but plays for Yost, hurry up, that whole thing. And then after he graduates, he coaches for Washburn, which is right near Lawrence. And his big innovation was to replace the tin wash tub in the locker room with a cold shower. That was like, I mean, you just kind of have to step back and go, these guys were playing under, you look at their uniforms and their pads and everything. And, we look at them as so primitive compared to today. And yet there were other things, they were riding horses, they're taking baths, team baths in like one guy jumps out and the other guy jumps in into the tin bathtub, stuff like that. That you
Talk
probably,
about the sweaty backwash you're
yes,
running.
yes, yes,
You won't be
yes.
the last guy in, right?
Yeah. So it's just like crazy the things that we just take for granted. And yet, his was a big step. Hey, we've got cold showers now. So then he assists Yost at Michigan for a year and then takes over at Bethany for three. And during that time, he beats Oklahoma twice. So they're like, maybe we should hire this guy to coach our team. And they did. So he joins Oklahoma, I think, in 1905. And he's there for like, 25 years as coach and AD. Partway through, he, in a hunting accident, he loses his right arm, I think it was, but one of his arms. And yet he still teaches himself how to skeet shoot and everything after that. Just, really a pretty incredible guy. He's, one of the first guys, 1913, 1914, with a pass heavy offense. He just happened to have a quarterback that a guy named Forrest Point, the point. Anyway, spot, because he could hit somebody on the spot. Point Forrest Spot Guyer, who's just a great quarterback, very, pinpoint passer. He took advantage of it, and they would throw 30 times a game in 1914, era. So, just innovative guy. Anyways, I think he's one of those guys that people lose track of, and yet his name remains on the Oklahoma campus. But more people ought to know about him. He's just a really, really an innovative guy, willing to adapt his style, his team, his plays to the talent that he had available,
Yeah,
which
that's a very
some
cool.
folks aren't willing to do, right?
Right.
So
I guess one of the questions I would have is, with the whole cold shower thing, those seasons, did the population of that area take a dip? These guys are after the game, they're ready to go. They're the big heroes going home and, spending time with their lady. But now maybe the cold shower sort of put a damper.
I think that Washburn may have been, it was like a lot of schools had a religious bent to it, so probably none of that was allowed.
Yeah, I'm sure it never happened.
Yeah.
Yeah, college age men, that would never happen, I'm
Yeah.
sure.
So then the third one maybe isn't as exciting. I just think it's fun. Was about the Army Navy Life Trophy. So back in the day, and the day being like immediately after the forward pass became legal, there was a publication called the Army Navy Life. So it's, some kind of publication that was targeted at Army and Navy personnel with stories about them, et cetera. And so they decided to sponsor a trophy to the winner of the Army and Navy game. And so I came across this, just found this picture of the trophy and a brief article about it. So I did I tried to research it. Basically, there wasn't a whole lot to be found out there about it. But it's mentioned in 1907 because Navy won the trophy, the first year it was introduced. Army wins in 1908, and this is supposed to be one of these trophies, like a lot at the time. The first team to win three times keeps the trophy. So 1909, Army had a defensive, well, he was a tackle, who was killed in a game against, was killed in a game. And so, and then Navy had a guy who was paralyzed in a game who died, later, maybe 4 months later from injuries. But they canceled the Army Navy game. So that the 1909 game never got played. And so after that, there's no mention that I can find of this Army Navy trophy. So, whatever happened to it, who knows? But it was like kind of a cool, like we have the Commander in Chief's trophy today, right? For Army, Navy, and Air Force. Back then we had the Army Navy Life Trophy, but it was awarded twice and then it disappeared. So if anybody out there is listening who happens to have in their basement the Army Navy Life Trophy, let us know. Reach out to Darren or to me, and we'll get you in touch with the authorities.
That's probably a very coveted trophy by collectors and museums
Yeah.
all
Can
over the
you, yeah.
place.
I mean, can you imagine, coming up with it? I mean, who knows? It could be sitting up there somewhere, right?
Well, stranger things have happened. I
Yeah.
have a friend of mine, Greg Fisseri, his great grandfather played in the early 1900s and late 19th century in Pittsburgh, the original pro football. And they had, and he, one of the teams he played for was Homestead. We talked about
Yeah,
recently.
with Bemis.
He found this trophy from 1902, Pittsburgh Stars winning the original National Football League, three-team baseball league of football. He found it in the Homestead Library in the basement in a closet. And nobody had any idea what it was. So Greg retrieved it, got it, asked them if he could take it, took it to the Pro Football Hall of Fame, and it's somewhere, or I don't think it's on display, but sit and think about that. This is, 60 some years before the Lombardi Trophy. Here is the original National Football League, 18 years before the one we know now is in play, and the trophy there. So that's really a good find. I think he found another championship trophy too from like 1902 or something, 1901. So they're that out
Yeah,
there.
I mean, you never know what's hidden in somebody's attic, and hopefully
Or
somebody
a broom
finds it.
closet,
Yeah, somebody finds an Army Navy Life Trophy, and then we've got another story to tell.
Yeah, most definitely. But you always have some great little stories to tell. These are the segmented tidbits that you did today in your factoid feast. But you have, often have these tidbits come out that really astound the history nostalgia of the game to us and really make it enjoyable read. And we learn a lot from them, myself included. And maybe you could tell people how they could take in some of these.
Sure. Just go to the site, footballarchaeology.com. It's a Substack site. So you can either just visit there whenever you want, subscribe. If in that case, you'd get an email every time I publish a new story. Or you can follow me on Blue Sky, or just bookmark the site and check in periodically. So, whenever you have an appetite for a little bit of old time football.
Now, Tim, our listeners have, and we do ourselves, we always have that appetite. So we're glad that you're there to fill it for us and come on and share it with us each Tuesday. So we'd love to talk to you again next week.
Very good. Look forward to it.
That's all the football history we have today, folks. Join us back tomorrow for more of your football history. We invite you to check out our website, pigskindispatch.com, not only to see the daily football history, but to experience positive football with our many articles on the good people of the game, as well as our own football comic strip, Cleat Marks Comics. Pigskindispatch.com is also on social media outlets, Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, and don't forget the Pigskin Dispatch YouTube channel to get all of your positive football news and history. Special thanks to the talents of Mike and Gene Monroe, as well as Jason Neff for letting us use their music during our podcast.
This podcast is part of the Sports History Network, your headquarters for the yesteryear of your favorite sport. You can learn more at sportshistorynetwork.com.
You did not see their faces on the Wheaties boxes, nor did they have the headlines, but they were breaking barriers, one pitch at a time. The integration of minor league baseball, a history and player register, 1946 to 1959, by Rick Swain and Gary C. Fink, shines a light on the overlooked heroes who paved the way for future legends. From dusty bus rides to hostile crowds, these players fought for a place in a game that did not want to see them win. More than history, it's a tribute to courage, perseverance, and the power of a game to change. Honor their legacy today and grab a copy of The Integration of Minor League Baseball at your favorite bookseller.